Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Deadline City. We are your hosts. I'm Zoraida Cordova.
And I'm Danielle Clayton.
And today, tell us where we're going, Danielle.
We're going to Hollywood Boulevard. I thought it was time to discuss all things translation of books into the small screen or the big screen, since I have an adaptation coming to Netflix. And we can discuss how it happens.
Absolutely. As of today, Tiny Pretty Things is available for streaming on Netflix. And I'm so excited for you.
It's weird. It's so weird. And
sit in my chair. Tell me why it's weird.
It's just bizarre. It's just bizarre because you have this thing that's lived in your brain and that's lived in a notebook, and then
it's lived in a book at the library and bookstores and right. People's houses,
and now it's on a small screen
with a million people commenting.
Oh my god. Yes.
Sorry, no pressure.
Right, so it's like kind of terrifying at the same time. So we'll see how it goes, but I wanted to do an episode to talk through some of the behind the scenes of like being a writer and how this happens and how wild it is and how, you know, random it feels, but also demystify it.
Right. The process is truly terrifying, I feel, and it's intimidating because you don't know how things get made. And even though I have a film option, you have things in the work, you have a TV show, but at the same time, it's like nobody truly understands how little authors, the majority of authors, have no say in their Hollywood translations.
Yeah, like just not involved.
I feel like we should... Like, I should tweet at Angie and it's like, hey, Angie, can you cast me in your next movie? Because that was such a prevalent thing, right? People were like, hey, can you cast me in your movie? And she's like, I don't cast. I'm not the casting director.
Oh, my God. Like, it was so funny to troll her with this. And so for those of you who don't know, our boo Angie Thomas, who wrote The Hate U Give, when her movie news and all the sort of they started casting the film, all of her fans started DMing her, tweeting at her, trying to get cast in her movie. And, you know, some people were unhappy with some of the cast members, and so they were trying to like throw in their hat in the ring. And she finally had to just say several times on social media, like, I don't cast movies. Like, I don't get to cast my own movie, because they thought that she was completely in control of everything. And so now I definitely troll her all the time. And I'll be like, so can I get cast in your next movie? Because she has On the Come Up coming. And so I tease her and she's just always like, block. She's trying to block me, but she doesn't realize that she can't block me. I'm like, terrible.
She can't block you.
I'm like, herpes. You think?
Oh my God.
I'm gone. And then I'm here again. She hates it when I say that, but I just said it.
That's like the worst thing. You say a lot of horrible things that traumatize me.
I know.
Because I'm so innocent.
Whatever. You're the worst too. You're the worst too. And I just say it as like, I'm a venereal disease that you're not going to get rid of, but like, I'll just become your friend over time.
Meanwhile, I'm like glitter. You think you've vacuumed away all of my essence, and then I show up on your little cheek when you least expect it.
That's better than herpes. I should
just yeah. I used to have a friend that said glitter was the herpes of the craft world.
Yeah.
So I think we're on to something. And now we have talked about herpes for longer than I ever wanted to on Deadline City.
Exactly. So yes, back to Hollywood adaptation. Usually, how does the process work?
You tell me.
You have one too. Okay.
So
you go first.
This is how my experience was. I feel like my experience was very serendipitous, right? Because to be honest, I didn't have a film agent for the first couple of, I have a film agent now, but I didn't have a film agent for the first few years of my career. So after Labyrinth Lost came out, and it's, you know, it's my pride and joy, my beautiful baby, I had the fortuitous moment where Labyrinth Lost was on an NPR roundup, right, for 2016. And there was an executive at Paramount Studios who had just happened to have read the article and saw Labyrinth Lost and then read Labyrinth Lost and then called us and asked us if it was available. And it was. And we had other competitors, but Paramount was the right decision, right? The right place for me to be. Mm-hmm. And the people were so passionate and so enthusiastic about it. And so they're, you know, they snatched up the option, and I've had the option with them since 2017. So that's how it happened for me. And I know that it's a little bit less traditional than submitting to places, but that's just because I didn't have a film agent. So that's an instance of studios coming to the author as opposed to the agent shopping it around. Would you say that's different?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. How did you feel when you got the news? Like, take us through that.
I felt like I couldn't believe it was happening. It was not, you know, a lead title. It wasn't like anything that I feel like people think of when they think this book is going to get turned into a Hollywood adaptation, right?
Okay.
So I sort of felt, to be honest, that it was like a prank. I was like, are you sure? I was like, are you sure they want my book? And I think that's just the way publishing has sort of made me feel over the years. But I also know that I do have a really wonderful book with a very original idea that nobody else had done at the time. And then I started getting exciting, but I also don't let myself get excited until the paper is signed, until there's like movement, right?
She's the worst of this shit. Like, she could get $1 million and be like, well, I have to make sure it clears my bank first.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that it's coming. I know that the check has been written.
But you don't know, because what if like somebody freezes my account? What if the check bounces? You have to be.
The bank has called me and told me it's in process. Yet she will not get excited.
Yeah. And then the day that it clears, I'm like, let's pop bottles. Let's go to Bali. You know, I'll pay for your vacation.
Whatever. She's just a troll about this shit. Like, she will not let me live in, like, happiness.
Look, I need to live with my feet firmly planted on the ground until things come through. But, okay, so I also feel like because I don't have expectations, I don't get my expectations dashed. Mm-hmm. So it is a form of self-preservation.
Whatever. Look. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you? How did you feel when the Tiny Pretty Things stuff came out?
Well, it was very different because we had – first, we had someone who wanted the rights. And we walked away from that deal early on because they wanted to take everything and not pay for it, right? And so our film agent at the time was like, this is a bad deal. It's better to have no deal than have a bad deal, right?
Okay.
You don't want to sell, for example, if someone comes and wants the TV rights for your book, you want to not sell them also the film rights. you want to not also sell them the stage and theatrical rights and all of those things. And this person wanted everything for one price. And we just couldn't allow that because then you're locked in. So let's say they make a movie and the movie does well, and then they decide they want to make a Broadway musical, and you've already sold away all of those rights under a purchase price. So basically right. What I propose is that they come to you and they say, hey, we want to option your work. Option meaning we want to take it off the table so nobody else can come and try to scoop it up. So here's a little bit of money against a purchase price. Once we've got our ducks in a row and we're ready, we'll trigger the purchase price, and then we have all the rights to exploit the material and to make it into a TV show, film, stage play, whatever. But mm-hmm. if they're only coming to do one thing with one vision, you don't want to give everybody the kit and caboodle all at once, because then you don't have any extra money you can make. It's like, Zoraida, I want to option your mermaid books, but you mm-hmm. know what? I want all three of them, and I'm only going to give you $40,000, but I'm going to make a TV show, I'm going to make a film, I'm going to make a stage play, right? And that's all the money you'll ever get, because I want to take this right now. Obviously, you wouldn't want to take that deal, because you should be able to make a piece of money off of a film, off of a TV show, off of a screen, you know, off of a stage play, off of a musical, right? And even if you don't see your book as a musical, you never know. Good things are made from material that you don't realize could be great musicals. So you don't want to do that. And so we walked away from that deal and we were like, okay, we'll just relax, see what happens. Then we had another producer come, our current producer, Insurrection Media, and a wonderful producer named Jordana, who's fabulous. And they were like, we would love to put this together, shop this around, figure out, you know what I mean, how this could work. So they optioned the material and got busy putting the show together. And they found a wonderful home at Netflix. We got other close calls with other places that wanted the show after they worked on their vision and figured out what it would be. But we found a wonderful home at Netflix, and then they got to work. And so Sona and I were definitely not involved in the whole process of translating the show, the book to film, but we got to visit the set and we got to hang out with the actors, and our fabulous producer kept us, you know what I mean, abreast of all the goings on, which we are so grateful for. And yeah, and now it's here for everyone to see.
I love it. But that's been really exciting, because doesn't it feel like for years nothing happens and then all of a sudden, boom.
Yes.
We're filming.
Yeah, it just feels like it's like an overnight thing, but it's not. It's like a lot of steps and a lot of work.
It's something to keep in mind when people use the term overnight success or something happens overnight. Like, for instance, with Labyrinth Lost, we had renewed the option twice before we got a producer, which mm-hmm. I love my producers. They're incredible. And a writer. And so we already have somebody working on the script. So it just... It just takes a very long time to accumulate and put something together. But you use two terms. We've used two terms that I think we should explain to people. We used an option and shopping agreement.
Mm-hmm. Explain. Explícame.
So an option is when somebody comes to you with money to take something off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And a shopping agreement is when... usually it's a production company or a group of people who want to make a film, but they want to – they're not going to offer – they either offer a small amount of money or no money at all, right? Is that what it is?
Yes. So oftentimes, and a lot of people don't do it. They don't. They'll say no, but some people say yes, where someone comes and says, hey, I would love to set this up. And they don't – and you have like a handshake agreement or like a small shopping agreement where it's like there won't be any money exchanged right now, but if I get it set up, then you will get money later. It's sort of like when those commercials come on for legal things, like, oh, we'll represent your case, and when you get paid, we get paid, right? Type of thing. So they take a risk taking the stuff around, but you know, some people don't like those kinds of agreements. They really believe that you should pay an option for something to come off the table and really invest the money. But I've seen things work out, you know, where there are just shopping agreements and also there are options. So there's many different paths to something being translated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The thing that I think is important to understand.
And I've seen people have shopping agreements and get those things made.
Yep. It has happened. And I think that it's important to just see what works best for your team, see what works best for this your property that you're working on, your book, and figure out what it needs and where it can sort of land, which it's just a process that is supposed to be fun, but it can be very stressful because there are so many no's before there's a yes. There's so many hurdles that your project has to hit before it's what's called greenlit, where a studio is like, yep, bet, we want it, let's go.
Casting, filming.
Exactly. And so tiny pretty things, nothing announced until the August where they started filming. And they did that on purpose, which I think was super smart, where
right.
You knew it was going to happen because they were on set. The news hit. They were already on set filming and like literally the production started rolling.
And I think that happened with Leigh Bardugo's Shadow and Bone. They announced with the cast.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The principal cast, not the full cast, but because I think they were still casting some of the other characters. But it's very strategic to wait because it's like we have all the pieces ready and we're ready to show it to the world.
Exactly. And I sort of like that because then it kind of quells some of the questions you get constantly, which is...
Can I be in your movie? I'm just really disappointed you did not cast me in your movie.
Exactly, because it's like, here's the whole cast.
Also, I was a ballerina when I was 9 years old.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And it's just hilarious. And it answers the sort of timeline, right? So it's like, look, here's the cast. They've already started shooting. You know what's happening. So then I got so few questions. They knew that it was shooting. And they can go follow all of the actors and stalk their social media and see little snippets from the show. And that was sort of the great thing, where now I'm not getting a swarm. Like, it's all spread out. They can go check the actors. But yeah, so it's just interesting. Interesting, and lots of ups and downs. And I just really focused on what I could control, which was my work and all the other things I was working on, and letting this translation happen at the pace which it was supposed to happen. So let's talk about some of these, besides just mine, other YA and kid lit and adult adaptations that are out there already and what we love about them. Because what I want people to recognize too, even looking at my own adaptation, is that the book is the book and the TV show, the film, or the other thing is the other thing. And there are things that are pluses and minuses about both, but they are two different experiences. So yeah. What are some of your favorite, let's start with YA, adaptations that are out there?
So Dash and Lily, the book is called Dash and Lily's Book of Dares. Mm-hmm. And it's about a girl who leaves a book at the Strand in the section of her favorite book, Franny and Zoe by J.D. Salinger.
Mm-hmm.
And a boy who finds the book, because that's also his favorite book, which is adorable. And he opens it and he realizes he's like super depressed, like he's home alone for Christmas. His family, like his girlfriend, left the country because she's like an international student. And he finds this book and they begin to write dares in it. And they leave the book in strategic places where they've completed their dare. And that's how they get to know each other and start falling in love without ever meeting. Until the very end when they realize, like, these dares are not enough. We have to meet in person, and then everything goes wrong.
Of course it does. I mean, cool premise. So cute book. Such a cute book.
It is. And it's the same team that did David Levithan and Rachel Cohn. That it's the same team that did Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which is actually one of my favorite movies and adaptions. It was just such a fantastic movie for me. And I still watch it every now and then. The music is great. You've never seen Nick and Nora?
No.
I love Nick and Nora so much. And so because it's the same team, I think that it has very specific traits that I think people really resonate with, which is coming of age, first love, love in a very short time period, right? Nick and Nora fall in love in a day, right? They're searching for a band. So there's a motif that's sort of moving the plot along. And in Dash and Lily, they fall in love in the period of a couple of weeks where they're writing these letters to each other in this notebook. And I think it's beautiful. So, and there's a big musical soundtrack. So like music is a big part of both of these translations. So that's something that has like a translation brand to me. Like if there's another book with another book translation by David Levithan and Rachel Cohn, I think I know what to expect, right? So that's like a very specific thing. I also really love the adaptation of the memoir Wild by Cheryl Strayed into a movie starring Reese Witherspoon. I was like really curious as to, one, it's also kind of weird that somebody does a movie based on your life, but I really loved the...
Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like that book.
I watch that movie all the time. Mm-hmm. So anyways, continue. I don't know what Wild is.
Wild is a memoir by Cheryl Strayed. She is the author of the series, the column Dear Sugar, and which is a self-help column.
Which is one of my favorite things. But I didn't know she wrote a book called Wild, sorry.
Yeah, so Wild is a book, a memoir about her. After her mom died, she hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, which is a trail that goes from a long-distance trail, which spans from the border of Mexico and California. And you hike all the way through up until the border of Washington and Canada.
Okay, so hiking. This is on... It is on brand.
It is. So it's hiking. And it's actually one of the things that made me want to do that. I know it's really cheesy and like some hikers are like, they're like, oh, Wild. But it is because it focused on like how you do this as a girl on your own, right? Like what are the dangers? Sometimes the dangers are people and not like bears.
Oh my God.
Okay. And so you see how like unprepared she was in the beginning, but it's like a metaphor for life, right? She was a disaster. And so she, for her, it's like, if I could just make it to this one spot, I will be okay. And it's like about endurance. And there are flashbacks to moments in her life when she just didn't make good decisions and was like, we have to watch this, Danielle. When we're in New Orleans, we'll watch it. I'll make you watch it. I was curious, for me, it was curious to see how they went from translating a book about a mother and a daughter and a hiking journey and how they make it all fit into a film. And I think they did a good job.
Well, I'm excited to watch it. It just hasn't been on my radar. And then you have to watch Where'd You Go, Bernadette?
Okay.
Which is another adaptation. It's an adult one that takes the same book and has Cate Blanchett. And I have an obsession with Cate Blanchett.
She's fantastic.
Just phenomenal actress.
She, as the evil stepmother in Cinderella.
I mean,
queen. Incredible.
Incredible. She's the range, honey, the range. I just love her. This movie just made me burst into tears. The book I really love, and it's about a peculiar architect, and she's writing emails and contacting a woman that is supposed to be her assistant. And it just reveals sort of like a lot of things about life. But I really love the adaptation and the book as two separate things, which I think people sometimes get frustrated with when something mm-hmm. is translated. Like,
right. Because things have to change, right? I think we talk about, we call it a translation or an adaptation.
Right, exactly. And I just think that, you know what I mean? People get frustrated because they want the literal actual, and it doesn't happen.
It doesn't always work because I don't think everyone works in a cinematic way. And I'm not saying cinematic as like a drag. I just mean like it's a very specific, some people don't think visually. There are authors that say like, I don't picture anything. So I feel like when you're not picturing anything, you're not really writing with like the idea that it's going to be translated, I think. And maybe even if you think visually, you still don't write that with that in mind. You just write, you can just visualize very specific scenes and characters and motifs. But I think that films have a very specific plot depending on what, is it a big blockbuster? Is it a quiet indie film? Is it a love story, right? I think that films have a specific narrative and convention, just the way that books have expectations depending what genre they're in.
Right. I also think that there are books that are super internal, and sometimes that requires a different adaptation to the screen. So things have to change, and I get right. being upset about those things that change.
I mean, look at the Twilight movies, right? That the book is an internal monologue for the most part. So the task for that entire series was bringing an active plot to something that, you know, the last 50 pages is where all the plot is.
I have no comment. anyway, some other adaptations I love are the Love, Simon, which is Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda by Becky Abertalli, and Love, Victor, which is a spinoff from within Simon's world. Love it. Love, Victor is on Hulu. I cried my way through it. I watched it with my 14-year-old niece. We were screaming. It was just a freaking delight. Loved it. Just like To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
I love the adaptions of To All the Boys. I think they're fantastic. Exactly. And that's something where the source material and the book that's something where the source material is tweaked on screen.
Right.
Both of those.
Yep. And yet the spirit of those books were preserved, which to me is what I'm looking for in an adaptation. That the spirit, mm-hmm. yes, I want to see certain plot things, really big things that I think are just like, I have to see that has to happen. Oh my God, right? Like there are certain properties where I feel that way about, like Outlander. There are certain things that I just want and have to see in that world. And I'm like, you cannot erase that. Or certain characters that if they were to get rid of them, I would mutiny, right? But I feel like producers know that, especially when they adapt something that has a large following. They watch the fans, hopefully they do, and know what we love. So they don't want us to mutiny on their show. So they give the ladies what they want, okay? Mm-hmm. While they also pull through new threads. Because if anyone out there listening is an Outlander fan like myself, they know that there are certain characters, like one of my favorite characters, which is Jamie Fraser's godfather, Murta. Murta has a different plot in the books, and they extended it in the show, which I thought was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Him around because everybody fell in love with this character because he's such a good character that Diana Gabaldon, you know, did something different with him in the books, and they gave him a second life in the show, which I'm here for. I'm all about it. So
I love it.
Yeah. So I really, really, really love that. that one. Another one that wrecked me was the film for The Perks of Being a Wallflower. I cried through the entire thing. When you read that book, that is a book that when a kid tells me in like the 7th and 8th grade that they hate to read, we read this book.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's told in letters and it's about a very vulnerable kid. And it feels like a similar, like there was a book that I read in the 3rd and 4th grade called Dear Mr. Henshaw, which was about a kid writing letters to his teacher by Beverly Cleary, which wrecked me then. This feels like this is like another one like that, where it's a kid writing letters and you don't know who he's writing to. And then he reveals so many things about himself. And when you've got a kid who's internal or a kid who doesn't feel like books have anything to offer them, for some reason, Charlie's voice in The Perks of Being a Wallflower really can open up what story is for, you know, an emerging reader. And that movie, because of the content, just ripped my heart apart. The actors were phenomenal. And yeah, I was real messed up. Sobbed. I sobbed through The Fault in Our Stars too.
I did cry. I actually cried listening to the audiobook, and a little bit during the movie, but the movie was also, I thought, really well done.
Sona and I went, and she got a screener. And we went to the, you know what I mean, the premiere or whatever in New York. And look, we were like, oh, we're good, whatever, blah, blah. There was mostly teenage girls in there with their dads. Like their dad, there was a lot of dads there. Look, I fell out. So did Sona. We were sobbing. I had a migraine when I left because the tears were so aggressive. What is that noise?
That's so sad.
Ever. It was because I hadn't read the book. Honestly, I have to be honest, is that I don't read his books because I struggle with that teenage voice that he has. So just no shade to Mr. Green. They just, the books don't work for me. They never have. But the adaptation of it, I was like, this messed me up. I was like, ooh. Because the only book I had read by him was Looking for Alaska.
I loved Looking for Alaska.
Did you watch the Hulu show?
I didn't.
You should.
I didn't.
It's a whole mood, honey. A whole mood. I love it. And that's what I love about it. It literally feels like a mood, like a different place. And yes, people don't realize, but that book has a historical time period that it's set in. And in the show, they do that without making it feel like you're watching a historical. You just know that you're in this contained universe.
Do you mean historical like the 90s?
How dare you?
I'm just saying, like, what's historical? I don't
know. It is historical, but I don't want to think why teenagehood is historical fiction, okay? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, your history as a teen is now historical fiction. So is mine, okay?
Okay, but whatever. Okay, so it's just the actors are really good, and the mood and the lighting and the sets, it's good. My niece was also obsessed. I was obsessed. I was into it.
That's great. And I that's really good to hear, because I really did love that book when it first came out. I think I still have my original copy from 2005.
Okay, so there was The Hate U Give, which is great. Everything, Sun is Also a Star. Devoured and watched all of those. There was Mismatched, which is our boo Sandhya Menon's book, When Dimple Met Rishi.
Yes. And that was really interesting to see the translation, because it was picked up by Netflix India.
Yep.
So it's in Hindi, but with a English, you can put a English subtitles.
Or it's mine it's dubbed in English. And so it's funny.
Really?
Yeah. Mine is dubbed.
Oh, I watched it with subtitles on.
I tried to, but I couldn't get one that had Hindi and subtitles. They just dubbed all of my stuff. they do it for Spanish, the Spanish shows I watch too. I can't just have it regularly and look at the subtitles. I have to see what's in my settings. But I had the subtitles and the dubbed on, and they did not correspond, which was hilarious. So I had to turn the subtitles off because they didn't match, and it was like messing with my brain. But it was interesting to see Dimple and Rishi taken out of the context of the book and sort of the diasporic Indian context and plopped into India, and how that changed the source material.
Right, because When Dimple Met Rishi is an American story about diaspora, but Mismatched is a story set in India. And so the culture is already going to be different. And so that translation, I feel like it's 100% different from the source material, except for the names and some of the, you know, the iconic iced coffee in the face, which I love that they kept that. It was my favorite part. I think it's what made When Dimple Met Rishi like so charming, because I was like, yeah, I feel you.
If it wasn't in there, it would be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay. So those are some of the things that have gotten made, right? Like, yeah, they've gotten through all of the gatekeepers and everything. Like, it's come together.
The Hollywood gauntlet.
Yes. So what are some of the things that we're excited that are upcoming? For me, I'm going to start with Shadow and Bone by Leigh Bardugo, because this casting is the only reason I have switched from Team Mal to Team Darkling. And I know I'm trash for that, but I will be trash for Ben Barnes.
You're so thirsty. Like, so thirsty.
Clearly, these hoes ain't loyal, because I was so easily like, oh, I love Mal in the books, but also, like, Ben Barnes is my Prince Caspian.
You're trash for that. And
I'm fine with it. Mal. I own it.
I love Mal. So
I do love Mal too. And obviously, like, the show is not going to retcon anything. But I'm allowed to feel how I feel, right?
Whatever. Look, okay, I'm very excited for this, because mm-hmm. if we think about the types of fantasy adaptations that we've seen, is The Witcher.
Yes.
Which you've been mighty silent about this season.
Oh, like I haven't been like The Witcher, because there's no new material. I know that they're filming, or they were filming somewhere in a country.
So your thirst bucket ass is just waiting.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for new material
to be thirsty about.
Yeah, I don't follow Henry Cavill on Instagram because he's just too much. You know, like,
you can't handle it.
Sometimes he's like nerdy and cute, and it's just like, I can't handle this. This just makes me sad that I'm single. But what were we talking about?
We're talking about adaptations that we love that are coming, or that we're
talking about. Why did you even have to bring up The Witcher? Like,
because I was saying we were talking about fantasy.
Okay, fantasy, that, right. Like, so, okay, this is how I feel. Let me tell you how I feel. So I really think that there is a space that has not been filled when it comes to high fantasy, that I really want to see, right? Like, Shadow and Bone is going to fill that gap. But I also want The Bells by Danielle Clayton, right? I want so many other YA books that are fantasy, but they're just so expensive, right? And that's the thing, like, books are hard to make because of the budget. Like, fantasy books are hard to make because of the budget. And so I think that you brought up The Witcher because you're like, okay, this got made. It was a book and a video game. Game of Thrones got made And then they
exactly
that ending was. But that's neither here nor there. It still got made, and it's like the big property, right? Lord of the Rings, it's getting made again.
I hate
right?
that. I need it. Why do things get made over and over again? Which we need.
True Blood is getting
no.
Rebooted.
Don't speak that into the existence. Like
it's already spoken. It has been spoken into existence by Hollywood. And I feel the same way you do. I feel the same way you do. I don't think it's necessary. It hasn't been. It's only been 6 years since that show ended. God. Give it two more decades. It's going to happen eventually. Just give it another 14 years.
Or let it go.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I know it's going to happen. There are some things that are just going to be recycled, right? Jane Austen, The Jungle Book, Little Women, Peter Pan. These things are always going to be remade. I just wish we had a little bit more time between them.
Or that whiteness didn't allow for the same material to be recycled.
I just know that it's going to happen. I just wish that we had a little breathing room from that, and that all of these other incredible books by people of color were made. That's how I feel about like the rebooting situation right now.
If there's another Little Woman reboot, like I'm going to die. You know what I mean? Like, the only Little Women reboot I want to see is Bethany C. Morrow's Little Women remix that she's doing with the reclaimed classics at Macmillan. That's it.
Right.
Like, I don't want to see Joe and them, like, in the same story, the same iteration. Some of us get to have our stories redone a gajillion times, and some of us don't ever get to have our stories made, period.
Yeah, I saw an announcement for a TV network wanted to do Jane Austen but sexy, and I was like, why can't you just take Vanessa Riley's books and make them like it's historical and sexy? Sarah McLean, historical and sexy. Like, why does it have to be that? You know what I mean? Like, there are other authors. And I think that it's, I understand the desire of, like, we know what works, so we're just going to do it, but different. We're just going to change one little thing. That's not enough for me anymore. And I think it's not enough for a lot of people.
Right, because everything is coming back and being rebooted. Gossip Girl, True Blood.
But I mean, like, look at how many things, you know, they restarted Star Wars years ago and then again for another trilogy. And then now we have like a Legion. But I think that that's also its own universe. I think that nobody knows if the audience creates the market or the TV people and film people create the market. And because nobody has nobody can answer that question. That's why we get so much recycled material.
It's so frustrating.
I think when you make something brand new and give it to an audience, I think that, and you do right by it, people will come to your door.
Right. And I think people are so scared too, because it's expensive.
It's a lot of money to lose.
Yeah, to take a risk when you could say, oh, well, we'll probably get this many fans if we just do the same old shit again. Yeah.
So. Yeah, but that's why I'm excited about Shadow and Bone, because it's culturally specific. And we know that Leigh Bardugo did the research, did the work to make that book feel a certain way, right?
Interesting. Very excited for that. What else is coming that you're waiting for?
Well, you got to say one.
Well, I was waiting for Artemis Fowl. That came. I'm waiting for What If It's Us. And
by Adam.
Adam Silver and Becky. And Becky Albertalli. Looking forward to that. Meet Cute between Arthur and Ben. I'm waiting for Jason Reynolds' Long Way Down, which will be stunning and make everyone cry, to see Will's journey.
Oh my God, that's going to be beautiful.
It's going to be so good.
The audiobook of that, of Long Way Down, if you haven't listened to it yet, Jason narrates it and
he kills it.
It's incredible.
Yeah, so good. I think I'm so excited to see P.S. I Still Love You. Yes. Well, the third one is called what? Always Laura Jean.
Always and Forever Laura Jean is the third book in the Laura Jean To All the Boys I've Loved Before trilogy.
Yep.
And books, like the books are really good. The movies are fantastic. Lana Condor is an incredible actress. I love her. I want to see her in more things. And I can't wait for that third one.
It's going to be so good.
And they come out on Valentine's Day usually, like around that time period. So we should get it in February, right?
Yep. Hopefully. Squee! And please like tweet us and tell us like other adaptations you're looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to Labyrinth Lost. I don't know if you know this author, but she wrote this like amazing witch series called Brooklyn Bruja series. And I'm really excited to see her adaptation. He can be like the worst, but so good. So really, really excited about that.
It's hype. I'm excited about Percy Jackson, which is Disney Plus.
Yes.
I just re-listened to the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series. And I just forgot how delightful everything was.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be really exciting. I didn't hate the movies as much. I did think that they made egregious changes that changed it from the source material in a way that it was just something else. But
source material is so good. So I never understood why
the change, because they wanted to age it up, right? Percy's 12 when the movie starts, and they made him into like a teenager in the movie.
I know, and, but I just didn't like, I didn't get that.
And that was a mistake. Like, I thought that, I think that's a mistake to age up characters unnecessarily, when the source material is very specific, right? Like his story banks on the fact that he is a teenager. Right. Whereas like, I think some books like could work as a little bit older, give a couple years. But I think that like with Percy Jackson, there's a reason why he's 12. When the book starts
speaking, yeah,
emotionally, you know, it takes 4 years for this prophecy to come through, so he has to be 16 when the prophecy comes through. Whereas, like, we already start with him as like 15, 16, so like,
there's nowhere to go,
yeah.
Another adaptation that I forgot to mention that's now on its second season that I have to start because I've been waiting to like stockpile episodes so that when I'm off, which is next week, starting the end of next week, that I, or this week since this is when our show goes live, that I can just watch, which is His Dark Materials, which is books by Philip Pullman, the first one being The Golden Compass, the second one
I still have to watch it and read it.
Yeah, and the third one, you made The Amber Spyglass. Those books were some of my favorite books I've ever read, only because I read them at the right time for, in terms of like when my imagination was growing. And I got to see, when I was in college, I was living in England for part of it, and they had put on a play at the National Theatre in London. And the play was, each piece was 3 hours long. So you had to do part one and then part two. And it was done with Japanese puppetry and all these things. It was one of the best experiences I've ever had in the theater. It showed me what theater could be. And it was where I knew that if I ever wrote a book, that I never wanted to sell away my film. Never wanted to sell away my play or theatrical, like those play and stage play rights, Broadway and musical rights, because I saw what it could be from seeing that. I still have the playbill from it. It was phenomenal. And that source material, I don't know, it just really speaks to me. If you've never read it, it's wild. This man's imagination is wild. It's not all perfect. Some of it is messy. But like, there are queer angels. There's people have daemons, which are manifestations of your soul outside your body. It interrogates control and puberty and growing up and what happens to children versus adults as we age. It's got witches. It's got a polar bear, a race of polar bears.
You had me on polar bears. Like, why didn't you say that in the beginning?
Sorry. There is something about this book that when I think about the
time. Wait, is it different than the movie that came out?
Yes. So the movie didn't do it justice, even though the iconography of the movie and the film is stunning. It's everything. That film, even though they didn't condense the story correctly, the show does it phenomenally, does it so much better. But his work, when I think of like, what are the types of things that I want to make? What do I want them to look like? His work and the way that they've adapted, even that movie that didn't do that well, this show is everything that I want my middle grade work to be. That meets Virginia Hamilton, who hasn't had her books adapted. But like, if you read her books, that is me. If there is anyone that is me, and when I talk to people who are like, oh, what do you want like for your stuff, for your films, for, you know, for the Marvelers, my dream is his Dark Materials meets like really Lovecraft Country Now, which is an adaptation that is phenomenal. Put those two together, that is me. Those two aesthetics are literally, I am the love child of those two projects, cinematically speaking, TV wise. And so because you haven't seen them, or I'm going to torture you, you have to. So
fine, we'll watch it in New Orleans. We'll add it to our watch list.
Right. Versus you are, I feel like, Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, I'm more of a Pan's Labyrinth. Like, Guillermo del Toro is like, I want him to do everything that I ever came up with.
Meets Charmed or Buffy, like, or
right. Not Charmed. Charmed, the production value is like not great, but those had a time and place.
Yeah, but what was good about Charmed is that there was really good humor.
The humor is fantastic, right? Yeah, the humor of Charmed, the humor of Buffy.
Exactly.
It created something that I feel like a lot of contemporary fantasy authors have been not echoing. Echoing is not the right term for it, but like, we're paying homage to that in many ways.
In conversation with, but
yeah. We're in conversation with it, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that. We didn't talk about First Kill by Victoria.
Yes, our boo, Victoria Schwab, First Kill. So tell everyone.
If you haven't, and if you don't know what it is, Victoria's short story, First Kill, in our vampire anthology, Vampires Never Get Old, is being developed right now at Netflix. You know, they have all the pieces going, it's churning, and we're so excited for what they're going to come up with.
Yes, it's going to be.
It is. It's basically Angel and Buffy but it's two girls. They're queer. And, yeah. and just read the short story before the TV show comes out.
Yeah, it's going to be so good. And I'm so proud of her. And she's just learning such new things, which I know are going to come back and like, hope for craft on all different levels, and we're just going to get better books out of it. And the short story is phenomenal. So if you haven't gotten Vampires Never Get Old, grab it for all of our stories, but like, get ready for her adaptation, which I am excited about because
I'm so thrilled about it. It's going to be phenomenal. Vampires
come back. Hold off on True Blood, but, but yeah, so I just feel like, when you get this adaptation and your work, it's that you're living the dream. Like, this is a dream. And I love dreaming big. And you know this about me. She keeps my feet on the ground, but I literally am like a little balloon, like ready to sail off at all times. She's one of my saddlebags that I push out to remind myself that, like, you know, focus on the work. Don't get too excited so your hope doesn't get dashed. Like, it's the perfect balance.
This bitch called me a saddlebag.
Saddlebag, you cute though. Cute, my cute saddlebag. But you know, I dream really big, and hope and, you know, hope that I get the shot to have some more of my imagination translated on the small screen and on the big screen so that I can invite everyone into my world. And I can't wait for Zoraida's books to do the same thing because they're so good. And I think that the types of contemporary fantasy you do, it's can be as long lasting as Supernatural, as Charmed, as Buffy. And it's time to see those characters done in like a Cordova way. Cause you have a way with humor that I don't do. I don't have funny books. My shit is not funny.
My shit is funny.
Yes.
As fuck.
It is.
And that's why like I had to, I know when I used, when I was working on Incendiary and like the people I was working with were like, they wanted to cut all my jokes. And I'm like, but bro,
I knew you're
you, you hired me and I'm like, my brother says I'm not funny, but
he's your brother. He has to say that. He has to say that.
And like, and I know what I have. Like, I know what I think my readers respond to, and so I did keep a lot into it. And I had characters that were there to bring some light in on scenes. So.
But this is what I learned from you. This is what I love about reading your books is that there's a balance between these hard-hitting topics and then this levity of hilarious, great comedic timing. I don't do that. I'm not good at that. So, like, I take pleasure in reading that. And to see that on the screen would just be amazing with, like, the right actors. Also, just know, everyone, that Zoraida's whole team, like, literally all of her actors will be, like, eye candy. Because she's a freaking troll for good eye candy. Literally, the only reason why she's probably going to watch Tiny Pretty Things is because there is a very sexy man named Ramon Costa who is a mercurial choreographer and like director.
He's a cranky Latino.
He's a cranky Latino, but he is a delicious man. And she was like, oh, okay, whatever. And as soon as I sent her what he looked like, on Instagram and she saw the character, she was like, oh yes, oh, I'm there. She was gonna watch, but now she's really gonna watch because okay, like, let's be honest, she's there for the eye candy. I mean, I am too. Like, I love A Discovery of Witches because I think that man is very attractive. So another pull to, I love those books too from Deborah Harkness. I do love them. I'm trash for them. But I do watch because that man is cute. And I do write my books thinking about which man I want cast in my thing or which woman I want to cast in my show so that I can have
eyes. I don't write like that. Why? I don't write like that.
Why? Why are you lying? You want Pedro Pascal to be in all of the stuff.
I just want him to be my daddy.
I hate you.
I guess I can cast him in that role.
Where can he be in Labyrinth Lost?
He could be the dad. I would love, like, my dream cast is like Pedro as Daddy Mortiz, Patricio Mortiz, and Rosario Dawson as the mom.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I think the two of them would be like, because that's what the family would look like, right? Like,
yeah,
mom, dad.
I'm literally working on a book, which I've been talking about on Deadline City, which is my adult book. And in my middle grade, The Marvelers, there are two characters. They're, you know, these, one is the dad of my character, and the other one is the love interest in the adult work. And I am after one man to play these two characters. And that is he's playing in the new Candyman. His name is Yahya, I think it's Abdul Mateen, the second. He might be the third. I'm like, hello, sir. Yep, Yahya Abdul Mateen the second. I'm like, I have two characters for you to play. I also have a character that I based off of Sam Heughan from the Outlander series.
Mm. Oh my god, we have to watch the Sam Heughan Christmas movie on Netflix.
Yes. So I do write with actors and my actors that I want to meet and like talk to or like be thirsty right. over. like just as like I'm like a 13-year-old girl again inside, and I just want to be thirsty.
I'm living in a time where it's like there are more Latino actors that I can choose from. Mm-hmm. So because before I just didn't write with anyone in mind, and now I'm just like there are more burgeoning actors that like newer people, because before it's like yeah I can choose from something but the actors are they've almost aged out.
Yeah.
Of what I could have done, right? But now there's a new generation coming out, and I hope that they can all do amazing things. And I think that's what my dream, like, I'll let myself dream big for, like, 10 seconds. I think my dream would be, like, I want to be able to create media that is representative not just of, like, light skin or mestizo Latinos, but, like, our entire groups of continents of countries that make us up, right? And be able to tell so many different stories on the big screen.
Right. You're making
that have never been told before.
A pipeline of content. And that is so important. I want to make jobs for all of the people of color, especially the Black people, to have work, mm-hmm. to have consistent, constant work just for them. Actors and actresses and people who do choreography, people who do makeup and costumes. I just want to give them all the work with the stories. And like, that's my great goal. I think it's awesome. I think you're going to make and help people find careers by just writing the books that you write. So never forget to write you have to be a writer.
Dreaming over, 10 seconds are over.
Whatever. You haven't guessed me? See this? She's always threatening me that she's not going to write books anymore. And then as soon as they start coming at her, like, oh, we're done now. We're done.
Restaurante Cordova is on a 5-minute break.
No.
Okay?
Whatever. Anyways.
But no, yeah. So that's what I want. And I want to work with people that I admire. I would love to. And just really respect, right? Like, I respect the fact that Oscar Isaac and Pedro Pascal have been busting their asses and putting up with so much bullshit in Hollywood since like their early 20s, early teens, depending. I don't know. They age so well. Like, I'm just going by pictures that I've seen of them. And now in their 40s, they're sensations, right? They're stars. And watching them be successful makes me feel like I there's like a reason why I need to keep going, which is a community aspect, right? Like, because they're inspiring other Latinx people to just keep creating.
And they're sexy.
And they're sexy.
So that also helps a little bit. Quite a bit.
Yeah. But no, it's like they're getting their due. People are seeing what we have seen forever, yeah, right?
Finally.
And then so it's amazing. And like I'm excited for what the future may hold.
Yeah, this is good. And everyone, this is the best time of year to binge. The world is about to get quiet as we go into the new year, and I love the process of reading a book and then watching the adaptation and having discussions with my other bookish, nerdy friends about what I think they got right or what I wish was there or what I loved and what I'm freaking out about. So, like, join us. Leave us some comments about what shows and books, show adaptations you're excited to watch, things that you're worried about, things that you're excited to see, and yeah, enjoy the downtime that's coming.
Dream big, everybody, and we will see you next week. Deadline City is part of the Frolic Podcasts Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.